3:37 on your drive home. Well, eco groups are calling it a whale of a letdown. A group of environmental organizations sent a petition to the Minister of Fisheries and Oceans, Dominique LeBlanc, and the Minister of the Environment and Climate Change, Catherine McKenna, this at the end of January. In it, it called on the ministers to recommend an emergency order under the Species of Risk Act to protect the southern resident killer whales and to set up a 30-day timeline for the ministers to respond. Well, that deadline has come and gone with nary a word from Ottawa. Our next guest says this is very bad news for the future of the southern resident killer whales. Misty McDuffie is with the Wild Salmon Program. We're, I guess you're the director there, with the Raincoast Conservation Foundation. Hi, Misty.
Hi, Mark.
Well, I just expressed the fact that this sounds like bad news. What is your response to the federal government's lack of response?
Yeah, they haven't said nothing. They've contacted us to say that they would like to meet with us to discuss the measures that they are wanting to put into place. And, I mean, we accept that you know, what we asked for in 30 days was a lot, but what we were looking for specifically was that was their willingness to use the Species at Risk Act and the provision to enact a specific order, so that we're looking for a legal mechanism, and they have not indicated their willingness to do so at this stage.
We have 76 southern resident killer whales remaining. At what number do you feel the government will cede and say, "Oof, this is a species at risk"?
Well, they in all of the their own documents, their reports, the workshops that they're doing, and their communication to the public, they convey that they are equally concerned about these whales. They recognize that they're a population in decline, that they haven't had successful calves since 2015, that 70% of pregnancies in the last decade have failed. They would not dispute any of that. But where they're lagging is their willingness to actually implement measures to reduce harm.
Is this a financial thing on the part of the federal government? Or, I mean, I don't understand if they agree that the situation is dire. And I know you can't speak for them, but I'm trying to figure out if they agree that this is a situation where we really have to have something done, why are they not doing something?
Because the implications are difficult. And that's why they've not done something for, you know, since 2002 when this population was first listed as endangered under the Species at Risk Act. It's not easy. No one is saying it is. But if we want to have and see killer whales on in our waters into the, you know, if our children to see them or our grandchildren, then we've got to implement those measures. But, yeah, it's the whale watching industry, it's shipping, it's fishing, it's all of these things that many British Columbians, you know, hold dearly.
Do you think that might be part of the problem, that this may be seen as a regional issue? And let me just explain by that by saying that when I lived in Ontario 6 years ago, for most of my life, all of my life, yeah, I saw killer whales in movies, and I went to Florida, and I thought it was really cool to see one in captivity. Little did I know. But it was the furthest thing from my mind, and I'm sure most Torontonians, they're not thinking about the killer whale. Do you think this is one of the reasons that this might be seen as a regional issue?
Yes and no. I think that's why Canadians pushed for and have a Species at Risk Act, because there will be species in other parts of the country that not everybody's familiar with, but as a collective, we care that the makeup of species that are iconic to this country are valuable. You know, it's like, you know, we know on the West Coast what's happening with right whales on the East Coast. So I think that Canadians are aware that we are fortunate to have these iconic whales in Canadian waters, and so I don't think it's that much. I think it's that it's not easy, and they're very powerful lobbies that are, you know, the shipping industry is the federal government is loath to regulate the shipping industry. So, and this is where we see those things.
This letter was sent on January 30th on behalf of the Georgia Strait Alliance, the Natural Resources Defense Council, Raincoast Conservation Foundation, your organization, WWF, the World Wildlife Fund, David Suzuki Foundation. What is the response as to what the next step will be?
Well, they've said that they would like to meet with us and present what they're planning on doing. And the reason that we put a timeline on this order is that we want these harm reduction measures in place before the start of this season's whale watching and fishing seasons. So, so we can, we're happy to discuss and listen to what measures the government is thinking about doing, but we want to see those implemented, and we want to see them be, that we want them legally enforced. And that's where the power of an order comes in, and not just, you know, sort of voluntary measures that that they would ask various sectors to undertake.
Okay, we're talking about the shipping industry. That's one. Are we talking as well about the fishing industry? What other industries will this would this affect?
Whale watching as well.
Okay, gotcha. And that season starts up pretty darn soon, as you say. I would imagine within the next few weeks.
Well, yeah. So southern residents are they typically would be coming into the Salish Sea sort of late April, May. Their patterns have changed more recently, and the whale watching industry sort of, because the whales haven't been showing up with the regularity that they used to, are sort of being forced onto other types of killer whales, like the big killer whales or the transients and humpback whales, and also fishing seasons. Yes. So, but both of those would, fishing as well, would be wanting to get underway in May, April, May.
Gotcha. Want to go to our phone lines, 250-386-1161, star 1070. What to do? We've got to preserve our killer whales. This is a huge part of our ecosystem, and frankly, it's a huge part of our identity, frankly. Scott, you're first on CFAX 1070. Thank you for calling, Scott. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Thank you for taking my call on this Friday afternoon. It's not brain surgery here, folks, what's going on with the wildlife. Human interaction and wildlife just don't mix. I've been in our waters for many years. Everything's declining. And why? Well, you can't have a zillion boats out there and whale watching. I mean, that's the biggest farce ever. I mean, you go out on that, and that's just harassment to the whales. I mean, they're going to say, hey, we're not that close. A whale watching boat hit a whale not too long ago. It's just, it's crazy. They got to get rid of whale watching. I know it's a big economical thing, but it's just detrimental to those poor whales. And, you know, in another 20 years from now, there won't be any left anyways. But that's my thoughts on
okay.
that.
Okay, Scott, hold on to the line. And Misty, if you can as well, I'd like you to take a moment to think about a response to this. I'm certainly going to. Scott is saying that whale watching is, my words, not his, but he says it's cruel. And that maybe we shouldn't even allow whale watching. Our guest is Misty McDuffie. She's with the Raincoast Conservation Foundation. Misty, we'll just take a quick break for news, traffic, and weather. We'll come right back and we'll hear your response to Scott's concern.
Now, Mark Brenne on CFAX 1070.
3:49 on your drive home. Conservationists say time is running out for endangered orcas off our coast. They say the federal government has failed to issue an emergency order to reduce threats to the whales as we approach the fishing and whale watching seasons. Misty McDuffie is with the Raincoast Conservation Foundation. Thank you for hanging in there, Misty. Just before the break, a caller, Scott, suggested that the whale watching industry harasses the whales and we should get rid of whale watching. What do you think?
Well, what Scott is referring to is the physical and the acoustic disturbance to the whales from boats. And it's small boats, large boats, commercial boats, recreational boats. And that disturbance, it can mask the communication that or the echolocation that whales are using to either find food or to communicate with other members of their pod. And often what happens is that even though the commercial recreational whale watching boats follow the guidelines that exist around whale watching, there are obvious boats on the water, and so people see that the commercial fleet is there, and they head out there in their little recreational boats. And it's those operators that tend to be the worst operators around whales. They have no consideration for the behavior of whales, the distance that they require, how the rest of the fleet might be behaving, and so they are often the worst offenders. But what one of the things that we are proposing, because everybody does recognize this, is that we're proposing these what we call these priority feeding refuge areas where killer whales would be able to feed without the physical disturbance of any boats. And this is scientists have been identifying their most important feeding grounds. And so if these really important feeding areas were off limits to this kind of physical and acoustic disturbance, that would allow the whales the space to pursue salmon and communicate and effectively, more successfully catch their salmon.
Okay. I want to get into some of the, because my next question was going to be under the order, what could the federal government have done to protect the killer whale? And you answered one of them, and that's to establish priority feeding refuges. Also, we'll talk about the speed of commercial vessels, et cetera. But I still have Scott on the line, and I wanted Scott to respond to your response. Go ahead, Scott.
Some of my concerns were addressed there for sure. The acoustic noises for whales, it's just, you go back a couple hundred years ago, I know none of us were here, but you can imagine how plentiful those oceans were. It's only been in the last 100 years that we've really put those vessels onto the water. And where do you think those vessels empty their bilge tanks? That's their bathrooms, folks. You hit a switch and it goes into the water. So, we're polluting those oceans. Even those ferries, we live on an island. I don't think we're going to get rid of the ferries anytime soon, but all those vessels in the whale's world is what's going to be the demise of the whales, unfortunately. So, the whale watching thing, they're literally chasing whales. Yeah, they're not, supposed to get too close, but they're still chasing the whales. The whales can't be happy about that.
Well, the whale watchers will tell you that they remain a certain distance away from the whales out of respect and to make sure that they can maintain their livelihood. They don't want to be fined or lose their licenses. Misty, a couple of things there that Scott brought up. First off, quickly, the bilging, the dumping of the toilets, let's say, into the ocean. How much of a factor is that as far as the whales go?
Yeah, well, you got to look at that Victoria's still dumping its sewage into the ocean. But
right.
the worst things that come with the pollutants in stormwater and in wastewater, sewage water, are often contaminants. And that's another one of the factors that is contributing to the status that these whales are in right now. So these pollutants accumulate through the food chain, they find their way into salmon, and then as the killer whales eat the salmon, they build up inside the whales. So how we treat our land is it shows up in the ocean, and with the state of salmon and the pollutants in both those and the whales, we have to really reform the way we treat our waters.
One of the other points that Scott brought up, I think it was his number one point, was this chasing, this harassing. Do you believe that these whale-watching companies chase the whales?
Well, they certainly follow them. And they've up until the last year, they've been allowed to follow them within 100 meters. And when you get, on average, 14 to 30 boats following them, and sometimes upwards of 70 boats, that must have repercussions on these animals in terms of their ability to communicate and feed.
And what I want to bring in some of the sorry, Scott, are you still there?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, quick response because I got another call here, a bunch of calls. Go ahead.
I'll make another analogy here.
Yeah.
Picture a family of black bears out in the woods. Can you imagine if there were 70 quads whipping around, staying 200 meters away, but following the bear through the woods for years and years?
It's a good comparison and a good analogy, but the reality is we do have that. And the problem is they've got guns in their hands. Appreciate the phone call, Scott. Robert, you're next on CFAX 1070. Go ahead, Robert. Oh, Robert's gone. Bob, you're next on CFAX. Hi, Bob. Hi, go ahead.
I was just listening to the conversation. I've watched whale watchers run ahead of the pod, go right in between them so they have to come right towards them. They say they watch them. Well, I see a lot of that going on. But I think the biggest issue with the food for the whales is if they cut back or cut out purse seiners and draggers, there would be a lot of fish left. I think. That's my opinion. As a troller, they pick away at a school. As a sports fisherman, you pick away at the fish. But the commercial fishing is too good.
Misty, can you comment on that? This is your field of expertise.
Yeah, so and we are calling for real reforms in the way we're managing our fisheries. We're focused on salmon right now because that's the one that I know. But we're having these sort of food web impacts from the extraction of just fish biomass from our ocean, and we're drilling down to the base of the food chain almost in cases now. But we are looking for reforms to the way that we're fishing and in the recovery targets for the salmon themselves. So even independent of the status of whales, we should be working to recover salmon populations, and DFO is really resistant to implement the kind of fundamental reform that we're looking for.
Okay, a couple of comments I'd like to pass on to you here. Alan writes, people have a right to keep their industries going. No government is going to stop shipping goods or stop the livelihoods of its citizens. Heather writes, is there a petition we can sign as the public?
Okay, so on the first one, yeah, the shipping industry. We could have a whole separate show on the impacts of global shipping, but what we're looking for in the Salish Sea is that the volume that's associated with shipping is capped where it is now, and that we start working every decade towards reduction. So we're looking for between 3 to 6 decibels per decade to reduce that. That noise from commercial shipping, and that can happen through slowing down. It can happen over time through retrofits, through engine maintenance. There's ways that we can quiet ships. If we want to see how quiet we can get them, we just have to look at the military to know that the technology does exist. And then on the second point, yes, Heather, you can go to Raincoast's website, and there's a place there where you can support our call for an emergency order, and you just fill it in and send it out.
We've got 15 seconds left. One question, and it's a very important one, so give it to me straight, Doc. How many? We've got 76 whales left. How long do we have if nothing is done?
Well, and so this is where modeling has shown that under the current conditions of do nothing, because these whales are long-lived, they will continue to be in our waters, but they're not successfully reproducing. So both our models and government models suggest they'll be extinct within a century if nothing changes.
Sad thought. Misty, thank you very much for your time. I'm going to take you up on your offer to do a full segment on shipping and the industry's effect and how it these ships and the noise that they make do affect the whales. Let's set that up. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Mark.
Misty McDuffie is with the Raincoast Conservation Foundation.